Night is the Color of a Self. A Due South Story, written by Salieri and read by Lutzula. Ray turns full circle on the alpine plain. All around them, the peaks are sketched thin blue on blue in unbroken chains just below eye level. The weird scale of it makes him want to kneel. Beside his boot, a tree, maybe 100 years old, Fraser says, is a pinwheel of leathery branches tight against the grey rock, pressed flat by the weight of the sky. Ray crouches to measure it. It's not much bigger than his spread fingers, grows in a flaky bed of pale lichen and scruffy moss. When he lifts his head, he has to steady himself with a fist in the thick fur at Deef's neck. Vertigo. The tiny and the vast are pressed together in the thin margin of space at the top of the world. They camp above the tumbled debris of the moraine field. Fraser's bedroll is aligned so that he faces the rusty grey rock face of the peak and the remnants of the glacier that weeps a thin stream of water into the bowl of the lake. Lacrimary, Fraser says, and explains about monks and nuns catching penitent tears while Ray looks the other way, across the muted green and buff grasses of the plain, toward the distant outpost of pygmy trees, and the ring of mountains like a safety rail to keep him from rolling off the plateau in his sleep. When the light finally drains from the sky, Ray dreams of voices. He opens his eyes and watches a wolf approach from the lake, weaving its way through the jagged boulders and across the scree with his nose close to the ground. Deef rises, takes a few steps toward him. A low wail drifts up from the riverbed, and there's another wolf, white on the white awning of an ice shelf over the black water. Ray rolls inside his sleeping bag to look the other way, and there's a third, a black silhouette on the ridge. It pauses a moment to look down at them, and then becomes a moon shadow sliding down the steep slope toward them. Fraser, Ray says in a low voice. But Fraser's already standing next to the fire, and he lifts a hand, palm out, at Ray. Ray goes still, but his heart is thudding behind his ribs. Wolves. No. When he looks back at them, he sees that he was wrong. They aren't wolves at all, but people. Young, thin, naked. Their eyes glow a hollow green in the firelight, just like Deef's when he turns to look at Fraser. Fraser says nothing at all when Deef settles down and begins to worry his paw, like he does when he's caught a stone between the pads of his toes. He pulls and tugs until the fur on his paw comes away, and he can freely move his hand to release the other, and then to peel away his wolf coat all of a piece. He stands a moment, a white-haired boy with eyes glowing a hollow green in the firelight, just like Deef's, and then he takes off at a lope to follow the others over the ridge, chased by the moon. Ray breathes slowly through his nose, in and out. Fraser, he says, I think Deef just got stolen by wolf fairies, or fairy wolves. Turning to him, Fraser says, I think stolen isn't quite the right word. His eyes are dark in the firelight, just like Fraser's. Are we going to go after him? Fraser looks up at the ridge for a long time before he shakes his head sharply once. It's his choice, he says. Behind him, the glacier fills the bowl of the lake silently in the dark. Fraser, Ray says. Yes, Ray. Now would be a good time to tell me I'm dreaming. You're dreaming, Ray. Okay, then. Ray settles more deeply into his sleeping bag. A not-quite-woven howl paints a long, thinning stroke of silver behind his eyes. When he opens his eyes again, the four wolves are there next to the ashes of the fire. He can smell the wet fur wildness of them. Light is seeping up from below the mountains to the east, and the white wolf trots off toward it, following the riverbed. Her feet crunch on the ancient snow. To the north, the black wolf is moving away too, back across the moraine to skirt the edge of the lake, and then tracing a zigzagging path up to a notch in the rock face. He doesn't pause to look back. The third wolf, who is tawny now in the rising light, looks down from the ridge to the west, makes a yipping sound, and heads over to the other side, out of sight. Weird. Crouching with his hand on Deve's back, Fraser says, "It depends on your point of view." "From here, it's pretty weird." Fraser tilts his head, politely non-committal acknowledgement. "So," Ray thinks, as he tucks his head into his sleeping bag, "it's a good thing we're dreaming." He can hear Fraser lie down again, facing the lake, and Deve turning a circle before falling with an exhausted, slightly disgruntled sigh into the space between them. Ray walks back from the lake with his hands held out to his sides and his eyes on his boots as he threads a path through the broken stones of the rubble field. He hopes he doesn't fall, because his 10-second bath in the lake has flash frozen his marrow and he's pretty sure he'll shatter. Back at the camp, Fraser's already stowed everything in their packs, and Deve is waiting, shoulder-deep in a patch of wild flowers. The tiny blooms nod against the empty sky as he turns to head away across the plain toward the pygmy trees and the dark swath of forest far below them. "Okay," Ray says as he hitches his pack into a comfortable position. "Where to?" Fraser sets off after Deve. "South," he says. The end. I'm Lutzula, and thank you for listening. This has been a reading of Night is the Color of a Self by Salieri. You can find more of the other's works at troyswan.livejournal.com. The spelling is TROYSWANN. And you can find more of my work at lutzula.dreamwidth.org.